Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I feel like when people come to an 8:30 session, I'm amongst my people. I'm going to talk to you about a small piece of a much larger initiative that we have going on in New Haven. And my work today is a little bit on the earlier side of the process that you've heard about this morning. I'm going to be talking more about the research that led to the development of some initiatives. I have nothing to disclose, at least financially. So why are we talking about the association between academic achievement and health? I think we all know. But I just wanted to talk about it here a little bit more explicitly. We know that less education means worse health, regardless of the outcomes, whether it's self-rated health, whether it's baby's chances of survival. And of course, we know that educational achievement leads to educational attainment, which leads to socioeconomic position and occupation, which leads to income. And of course, we very well know about our income gradient in health, and that lower income is linked to worse health, no matter what the outcome. So in looking at the literature of associations between academic achievement in children and their health outcomes and health behaviors, of course, we see that there is some evidence of a reciprocal relationship where kids with poorer health outcomes achieve less, and children who achieve less are more likely to have worse health outcomes. But previous research is limited. It often looks at just one health factor. For example, obesity is one that's commonly seen in the literature. And the academic achievement is very often not objectively measured because it's very difficult in a lot of cases to partner well with school districts and get more objective measures of academic achievement. But of course, we have all of these calls to action, and this is just one of them, but the 2005 IOM report on reducing childhood obesity is saying that individual efforts and societal changes are needed, and that we really need to intervene at multiple levels and include schools in that list. So if you're not aware of what our context is in New Haven, I will just simply say that we are a place of many, many disparities. We have a huge wealth disparity. Connecticut is one of the wealthiest states in the country, and New Haven, as well as Bridgeport and Hartford, are three of the 12 poorest cities in the U.S. We also have an achievement disparity, and Connecticut, in that recent, I don't know if everyone's familiar with the recent Department of Education study, national study, Connecticut was found to have the largest achievement gap between wealthy and poor in the nation. And we have huge health disparities. From the whole course of the life course, New Haven residents face risk of illness or disability, depending on what you're looking at, that range from 1.5 to 7 times higher than others just across the border into the suburbs along the shoreline. And New Haven, just a little more context, is a majority minority, predominantly black, but also a large number of Hispanics as well, which of course increases those disparities. So I'm going to talk to you a bit about our research collaboration with the New Haven Public School District as a part of a larger multi-sectoral longitudinal effort. I'll call it effort. It's very large effort, study and longitudinal study and multi-sectoral interventions called Community Interventions for Health. And it's about preventing chronic disease by looking at different sectors. I work mostly in the school and the neighborhood sectors, but we're also branching into workplace and health centers. It's a longitudinal study. We're part of a global effort coordinated by the Oxford Health Alliance. And so I'll be talking to you a little bit more, obviously, about the school context today, but just to know that it's within this larger effort. We focus on the three main risk factors for preventing chronic disease. We focus on the six most low-income neighborhoods in New Haven. And what I'll talk to you today mostly about is that we focus on 12 randomly selected K-8 schools in New Haven as well. I have to say that we use a community-based participatory research model. We are very committed to moving our results quickly out to the community and to the schools, and so we use an accelerated timeline. We hire community residents and train them to do all of our data collection. We engage youth in the data collection, which I'll tell you a little bit more about, but I have to put a little plug in for that. I'm not going to talk to you today about our asset mapping. We actually have an article on the process of engaging youth in our asset mapping, which is just being published in the December issue of the American Journal of Public Health. And I will put a plug in for the documentary that these youth created when they were doing our asset mapping 2 summers ago in 2009 as a part of our wonderful partner, The Color of Words, which is a leadership, youth leadership development and media training organization. They created a documentary called 3,000 Miles, which was the collective number of miles that the youth walked that summer mapping their neighborhoods and all the features of the built environment that impacted their health. And that's showing in the third film festival session today from 2:30 to 4. And two of the youth who made that will be presenting. A little plug for that. So we did surveys. They were 40-minute online health and behavior surveys. Our sample included 5th and 6th graders. We invited all students in those 12 randomly selected schools to participate. 1,094 completed the survey, which was an 88% response rate. We had only a 2% parent refusal and 10% absent. You can see the topics there. They ranged from the health behaviors related to our three main risk factors, as well as general health, healthcare utilization, stress, neighborhood characteristics, other issues that were important to the community and to the school district. We also took physical measures of the kids. We have physical measures for all 1,094. They were taken in gym class with trained research staff from the community, and we took height, weight, blood pressure, heart rate, and waist circumference. We also, through our wonderful collaboration with the school district, were able to get access to their SchoolNet data, and that's where we drew our demographic characteristics, whether or not they were eligible for free or reduced lunch, which is our proxy for socioeconomic status and absenteeism. We also were able to go and mobilize the PE teachers to get all of their physical fitness scores from the presidential physical fitness test, which had never been in electronic form before. We actually had to get them to take it out of their pencil notebooks and put it into our Excel spreadsheet so we could append it to our data. And then we had the Connecticut Mastery Test, which is Connecticut's standardized test. We had scores for most of our sample. And so we were able to look at those as well. So the research aims for this study is to document the association between health-promoting factors, and I put that in quotes, we really are positively focused here. That was the one of the charges of the school district, to talk about healthy weight, to talk about health-promoting factors instead of obesity and health risk factors, because they know that those are issues of very serious prevalence within this community, and wanted to be more positively focused than what we often see coming out of New Haven schools. And so we looked at a huge variety of health-promoting factors and looked at their association with academic achievement. We looked at behavioral, environmental, psychological, and physical health factors and associated them with these CMT scores. And then we wanted to look at the cumulative effect of these factors on CMT scores. Before I go on, I should also mention that because this is a longitudinal study, the data I'm talking about is from our baseline, but we are actually in the schools at this moment. In fact, today we are starting physical measures. We just completed all of our surveys yesterday. And so I hope next year to be talking about some of the longitudinal data and some of the change data that we'll be looking at as well. So the sample characteristics from baseline and for this particular study was 940 students who had all the data we needed for analyses. They range from 9 to 13 with a mean age around 11. They were pretty much equally divided between the 5th and 6th grades that we had sampled from. A little over half were girls. It's a very diverse sample, almost 44% Hispanic, 40% African American, 14% white. Most are eligible for the federal free or reduced price lunch program, which is a very good indicator of socioeconomic status in New Haven Public Schools. Because of that, the school provides free lunch for all students, but they do collect eligibility for their own reporting purposes. And 29%, around 29% achieved goal on all three standardized tests, which is roughly equivalent to grade level. There are five different levels in which the scores are categorized. It's the level in which Connecticut focuses on for their own goal setting for academic achievement in the state. But then the three standardized tests include reading, writing, and math. There's science, but it was only for half of our sample, so we only looked at three. So less than a third are achieving goal or grade level on all three standardized tests. We know from previous research, but we've been able to document it well in this study, that overweight and obesity is a significant problem with this population. We have about a half of the sample who are overweight or obese as a result of the physical measures that we took. And I just wanted to show you a few things. You know, the health survey is quite long, but to see that our students are faring poorer than national averages. They have higher asthma, diabetes, higher, they're reporting more restrictions to their daily activities, a lot of ER use. Exercise levels are low, lack of safety in the neighborhood. We looked at family meals and whether or not they're eating fast food, and those are quite high. We have very high food insecurity, both among our students and with the adult sample that we had surveyed as well. 82% have a TV in the bedroom. You'll see that in a minute, how significant that was for actually all of our findings with this sample. And many of them are reporting 3+ hours of screen time, which is a video, TV, and computer. So these are the factors that we ended up including in our health promoting index, or health index, I'll call it. I was really hoping that would shine much bigger than what I saw on my screen, but you can see that healthy weight is the first one, being physically fit as measured by the tests, meeting fruit and vegetable recommendations, less sugar, sweetened beverage drinking, meeting exercise recommendations, less screen time as according to the AAP, never having smoked, eating more family meals, eating less fast food, being food secure, having no TV in the bedroom, being emotionally healthy, having less frequent sleep problems or disturbances, and feeling safe in the neighborhood. So as you can see, I coded everything in the positive direction. And there are quite a lot of significant bivariate effects here. And I have controlled for socioeconomic characteristics here. And you can see that the most dramatic is whether or not the kids have a TV in the bedroom. But clearly, body mass index, being of a healthy weight, eating less fast food, being physically fit, all of these things were associated with achieving goal on all three CMTs. And in many cases, the disparities between the yellow bar, those with that factor, and the blue bar, those without that factor, reporting that factor, being measured on that factor, are quite disparate. So looking at it cumulatively, we split the health index into equal tertiles and took a look at the cumulative effect of health-promoting factors. We wanted to see, is there an effect of more health-promoting factors on achievement, regardless of what that particular health-promoting factors is. And you can see that there's a very dramatic increase as the students move from 9 health-promoting factors to 10 or more health-promoting factors. There's a huge increase in the percent who achieve goal on all three CMTs. This graph has been very well received by New Haven Public Schools. It really shows a dramatic effect here, and it's one that we first wrote up in a report that we distributed to all school administrators and Board of Ed and principals before we wrote it up into this format, which this paper is being reviewed right now at the American Journal of Public Health. So our conclusions, regardless of any specific health factor, those who had higher health index scores were more likely to be at goal for all three standardized tests. So obviously we found that in this urban sample, health is closely associated with academic achievement. And our argument has been that there are these national and local priorities to reduce health inequalities in health and in the academic achievement gap. And so it's essential to identify factors that might impact both, so we can have a better effect on both health and academic achievement, which we know affects each other continually throughout the life course. Locally, we're trying to tie health education and improvement interventions with local education reform efforts. New Haven's going through a very large education reform process, and we actually were able to get an R01 doing a randomized control trial within our 12 schools with a new sample of fifth graders we're starting to collect data on right now as we speak, as I was mentioning, along with our follow-up from this first cohort, to be able to look over time at school-based interventions that focus on, in 3 schools, nutrition only, in 3 schools, physical activity only, in 3 schools, both, and in 3 schools, none, to see what kind of effect we can have over time. And those look like we have a district-wide social marketing initiative. We've created a wraparound wellness report card. We have Weight Watchers for staff and teachers, really looking at role modeling as being important for kids' health and behaviors. I mentioned the RCT and what we're going to be doing with that. are tying health topics and Yale mentorship to student science fair projects. We're going to be creating cafeteria learning labs with different diet and exercise hands-on activities each month. We're looking into joint use of schools as community rec centers for after school, all the things that I'm sure a lot of you are doing. We are going to be mobilizing very intensely into our randomized control trial and including youth as leaders in all of that as we can. One other thing I did want to say. We are doing a Healthy Corner Store initiative as well, and we're focusing them in the neighborhoods from the neighborhood sector of our study, but outside of the schools that we are intervening in, and so that we can build where students are buying their snacks before and after school into this Healthy Corner Store initiative. So everything that was talked about previously were a lot of the process and experiences that we have had. And we're branding our Healthy Corner Stores with signs outside and inside. We are looking at getting refrigerators donated from GE. And we do what we call a Healthy Corner Store Extreme Makeover before each one is launched, where we engage the youth and Yale undergraduates to do painting and renovating and repositioning and all the things that was discussed in the previous talk. So thank you very much.